So the title of this morning's sermon is Embodiment of Spiritual Practice. What does it mean to have a spiritual practice as a Unitarian Universalist? After all, we are not all in agreement about that word spiritual. And I suspect we are not all in agreement about that word practice. About five years ago, I co-led a group called Wellspring. Some of you, I think, have participated in that program. It's like a chalice circle on steroids, is how I describe it. It meets twice a month. Spiritual topics are discussed in depth, and everyone is expected to develop a spiritual practice, a regular spiritual practice, and to meet regularly with a spiritual director. That group was the beginning of a turning point for me. You see, I grew up Roman Catholic, and for me, it was not a bad upbringing, thankfully. But it did leave some lasting imprints, as you can imagine. I grew up hearing about all the saints and their seeming perfect holiness. The bar was set pretty high as to what was to be a spiritual practice. And often the points of the story seemed to be that I should be willing to have a faith so deep that I would die for it, and that spiritual practice led to moments like Moses standing before the burning bush, or something like that. It left me sometimes with the feeling that there was no way I could even get close to that. And mostly we were taught about prayer as a spiritual practice being prayers of adoration, petition, confession, thanksgiving, and praise, and they all seemed to be things that you did on your knees. Sometimes as a kid, it is hard to name the waters you swim in, the world you grow up in. What you know first in your life is what is normal, and it's hard to think critically about it. There were things about that model of spiritual practice that did not sit well with me, but it was years before I could give voice to my struggle with it. The model of spiritual practice I was given was of prayer, and prayer was something you did either communally on Sunday service, but really it was not very communal because we all just kind of sat quietly in our own prayers, or it was done alone, again quietly and with reverence. Now, as an adult, when I was about 7 months pregnant with my second child, I went on a retreat for ministers where quiet prayer and guided meditation was what we were to be doing. During the first guided meditation, I was instructed to settle into my body, let the distractions of my life go, let the distractions in the room go. I was to simply be. Now, in each of my pregnancies, I noticed something. The quieter I got, the more active the baby got. Foreshadowing parenthood, I think. But there I was, sitting peacefully, trying to let it all go. And there was the baby going, poke, poke, poke. Mom, mom, mom. And my first thought was, male monastics created this practice. I don't think they factored in pregnancy. It started me thinking about what is spiritual practice and how can I embody it when I have a family and commitments, and finding quiet time to myself is often too much of a luxury, and sometimes when my kids were little involved lying to them and telling them that the bathroom door was actually soundproof. I did do that. I don't live a life where I can take 45 minutes each day and shut off my mind and turn off the demands. And not all of us have a temperament to actually practice that kind of meditation. Those of you who do, I hold you up and say bless you, because the few times I've been able to do it, it is an amazing experience. And in no way am I saying that meditation is not worth your time. It's totally worth your time. But I also know that we are a variety of people and different temperaments fit better or worse with different practices. It's not all one spiritual practice for this variety of people. That moment during that retreat left me with questions. Why do so many of the spiritual practices we hear about, or at least the Western practices, ask us to let go of our experiences and move away from our bodies? I think that some of the meditation practices based in Eastern thought do not carry with them this mind-body split. In my spiritual journey, I went from that childhood imprinting of what prayer was to be to a Unitarian Universalist world, where early in my UU ministry, one minister colleague told me that his spiritual practice was baking cupcakes. At the time, I honestly did not know what to do with that. I did know not to say anything, and I have actually learned much since then. We have this mind-body split in our Western world. The philosopher Descartes famously wrote, "I think, therefore I am." Not, "I breathe, therefore I am." Not, "I love, therefore I am." Not, "I am in a community, therefore I am." He gave voice to a way of thinking that says the mind is the most important. It is what makes us us. He lifted it above the rest of our lived experience. Descartes' thinking would not have resonated so readily with folks if there was not some truth in it. We as humans do have an experience of being self-reflective, and it does give definition to much of what we do. But there are also some real problems with it. I can wake up in the morning and get out of bed without much of a thought. I can go down the stairs, get my cup of coffee, I can get dressed, feed my kids, get in my car, all without much thought. I can separate my thoughts from my body because, at least for the moment, I am not living with a disability. However, if it took a lot of effort to get out of bed, or if I needed assistance with that, I would have a different relationship with my body. I would not so easily be able to separate my experience of myself from the lived experience of my body, which is to say there is an inherent ableism in our mind-body duality of our Western thinking. In preparing for this sermon, I thought, well, so what if I were to look earlier than Descartes? What would the spiritual practice of the Middle Ages, for instance, be like? Google did not help me with this one. It is possible that I did not question Google clearly enough, but it is also possible that the question, what were the practices, spiritual practices of the Middle Ages, is a question mired in modern day thought. Sometimes how you form a question shapes what answer you get. So what is true about the Middle Ages, at least in Europe, is that it was all about the church. There was little distinction between religious and secular life. All life was dedicated to God and the church, for good or for bad. Monastics did separate themselves from the everyday world and live a life that was strictly structured around spiritual practice. But for the everyday person, there was work which was done in the service of whatever ruler you lived under, a person who you were told was appointed by God, so your work was for God. And there was the church and its festivals. And it was all of one piece. There was no 40-hour work week separate from our family life. There was no weekend. I'd like to get away from the thinking about spiritual practice that defines it as something over and separated from the body, that is done in a radically individualistic way, and I'd like to stay away from the idea of all and everything being about the church. Our Western history seems to give these two points as polar ends of a spectrum. I'd like to find something in the middle. I had everyone sing head, shoulders, knees, and toes during our time for all ages for a couple of reasons. One, I wanted people to laugh. I'm not sure that laughing in and of itself is a spiritual practice, but I do know that when a spiritual practice seeps into you, you will laugh more. And I had to sing it because I wanted to bring home that we are bodies. No matter what your body is like, old or stiff or flexible or tiny or big, if you are able to move under your own power or you need assistance, we cannot really separate our minds and souls from our bodies. We cannot live only in our bodies, and we cannot live only in our souls. So I want to invite you to join in another piece of singing, which of course is a form of spiritual practice. Sarah Jo is going to lead us in a meditation of breathing. I don't think you're going to need the hymnal for this one. I have a couple more sentences, Sarah Jo. I'd like you to focus on the singing, and I invite you to look at the front of your order of service. On it is a finger labyrinth. Sometimes a spiritual practice that is used is walking a very large labyrinth while singing or praying. That is not possible this morning, but if you would like, while you sing, you can trace your finger in and out of the labyrinth and begin to imagine what it might be to walk a labyrinth.
This piece, if you're not using your hymnal, it's a lot easier. But some of you don't know it, and you'd probably like to know the words. There are three parts. If you're a one-note, old kind of person, or you have a low voice, you can do the drone, which is going to start the piece.
You see, you did not have to sit in some complicated Zen position for that. I am not going to tell you what you must do as a spiritual practice. I will say that I think two things are essential for a spiritual practice. The first is practice, regularity. Have any of you ever learned an instrument? It's all about the practice, isn't it? You sit down to practice the piano and you're not going to play well the third time out. But over and over again, you build muscle memory. By practicing, you create the container within which growth can take place. It is the same thing with sports. LeBron James was not born a basketball star. He built that one dribble, one shot, one practice at a time. I struggle with this part of spiritual practice. Regularity is not my strong suit. But when I practice spirituality on a regular basis, I notice that I am creating a container within which spiritual growth can take place. The second thing about spiritual practice to remember that is important is that mindfulness plays a big role in spiritual practice. This is what I did not understand about the minister baking cupcakes. It was not the baking or the fact that it was cupcakes, which is where my mind got stuck. It was the mindfulness with which that minister brought to it, and practice helps with that. And what does mindfulness look like? Well, it does not look like this. Oh no, where did the day go? I have to do my spiritual practice. It's time for baking those cupcakes. Sure, I think I can do this in 15 minutes. Okay, so I'm going to mix the flour and the salt and the baking soda and the eggs, and we only have 2 eggs. I need 3 eggs. Okay, that's just going to have to do. So I'm going to mix the eggs with the butter. I forgot to soften the butter. All right, I'll put it in the microwave. Oh, whoops, that's too much. Now I have to blend the eggs with the butter goop and add the vanilla. And where's the vanilla? Who hid the vanilla on me? Somebody always hides the vanilla on me. All right, now mix the egg mixture with the flour mixture. And oops, I forgot the milk. I'll just add that in. And now put it in the oven. Oh, was I supposed to preheat that? So if cupcakes are my spiritual practice, then first I'm going to give myself enough time. I am going to think about why I am baking them, who might eat them, and why they might enjoy them. I'm going to gather the ingredients together first, and I'm going to turn on the oven. And I'm going to remember to be thankful for the people who made those ingredients possible, the migrant workers who milked the cows and gathered the eggs, the truckers who drove the ingredients from there to here, and so on. The checkout clerk at the grocery store who didn't crack the eggs when he bagged them. Then once they are gathered, I will start to mix, remembering all of the science that I don't understand that goes into the magic, or what my mother-in-law used to call chemistry, of baking. I will smell the smells and enjoy them, thankful that I can do that. I'm going to enjoy the physicality of it all. After I get them in the oven, I will clean up after myself, not because I have to, but because it is an important closing step of this spiritual practice. Baking cupcakes in this way is unlikely to add much time at all to the process. And in fact, I would guess that it would actually decrease the amount of time to cook, since the frantic looking in the cupboard or making substitutions would be eliminated. What it does add is a sense of gratitude to one's life, a sense of living in the world where so many people and things are interconnected. Mindfulness connects me to my senses, and that can lead to moments where I feel connected to that which is larger than myself. What I have learned over the years that is different from the way I grew up is that spiritual practice is always embodied. Our bodies are as sacred as our souls and are intertwined. It is only our language that makes them separate. In the back of the church, in the narthex, I have some booklets entitled Sacred Practices, created by the Sanctuaries, a sacred community located in Washington, D.C. That booklet lays out 10 possible sacred practices or spiritual practices. Listening, writing, praying, moving, dancing, seeing, making, breathing, eating, reading. Those are all just examples, and if you are interested, I invite you to take a booklet. Almost any activity that you do with your body can be a spiritual practice if you approach it mindfully and commit yourself to practice it regularly. It will feed your soul. It will feed your body. I promise. In a world without end, may this be so.